This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to talk some Blues hockey. Welcome to the Blues NHL podcast, hosted by former Blues defenseman Jamie Rivers and former Blues enforcer Darren Kimball.
And we got a problem in front of the Hog bench. Kimball pulling at Roenick. Here's Kimball swinging at Roenick wildly, and the linesman trying to get in between them.
Federico stole it from Reinhart, breaking in to Hunter. Hunter shooting, rebound.
Chevalier, he'll be thrown out of the game. Curtis Joseph grabs Chevalier, and the two goalies go at it head to head. And Joseph with three great rights.
Turgeon Hall looking for 500. He shoots. He scores. Brett Hall, number 500.
Oh, unbelievable save by Jake Allen. Tarasenko in the clear. He scores.
And now, here's your off-ice official, Jim Cromer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special edition of the Blues NHL Podcast as we come to you live from Minner Arena. Let me welcome in our guests here as we're on Facebook Live. So let's welcome in Jamie Rivers and Darren Kimball, former Blues. What's going on, fellas?
Not much. Always good times. We got our Urban Chestnut beer. I got Red Bull. So Red Bull, any sponsorship out there, please bring it my way. I spend too much on it.
This guy's selling today.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm trying.
wait till the other guy gets
yeah.
here.
Right?
Well, I want to welcome in everybody on Facebook Live. Going to try to start doing this a little bit more, but this is a special occasion. You can notice the empty chair. We left a big spot over here, as Jamie says. It needs to be big, big wingspan, things like that. Have a special guest hopefully going to arrive for us here shortly. That being said, need to thank a couple people. Lion's Choice for today. You see the Urban Chestnut Zwickle. Thank you, guys. And, of course, our host, Dennis Minner, live from Minner Arena. Thank you, Dennis. We love your man cave.
This we should do tremendous. The wave, Kimby. We should do the wave. No? Okay.
There's no wave.
I tried.
Is there a power play dance? What about that? No? No power play
dance?
No, wow. Towel guy? Anything?
Towel guy.
Nothing?
Why are you picking up all the worst things?
I'm asking. I just want to know where he stands.
He's pinpointing all the worst things.
Well, speaking of worst things.
You hear about that guy up in Quebec, eh?
No.
He drowned in the wave.
He did drown.
Colisée.
You know who's drowning in the wave of social media? We got a couple players. Boy, the Dallas Stars social media group. What is going on?
I knew you were
going
to try and get me fired
up
here.
Well, I could tell that you weren't happy when you walked in about it, so I figured we better discuss it and get it over with, eh?
Well, this is a bit of a Jamie's pissed.
This is? Oh.
It is. It is, ooh, because I've been hanging on to this. Fortunately, and it was a lot of fun, I had the chance to be on the broadcast for the game with Scotty Warman, Fox Sports Midwest. And the game itself was entertaining. It was good. The Blues were into it. It was fast-paced. Certainly Chris Thorburn, our guy, you know, jumps out, and he gets jumped. And still, the best part of that is he gives a couple of complimentaries there at the end to Roussel, which were much deserved. But the third period, I was sitting there watching it, and people were with me, and I said, I just feel like Dallas has come out here in the third, and they've said, enough. And they're we're taking this game over. And I didn't really know when it was going to happen. And then it didn't just hit me. I think it hit all of, you know, Blues fans and everybody. And this is not Petro's fault, okay? Because a guy like Petro doesn't match up physically against a guy like Jamie Benn. But Jamie Benn kind of trips him, lands on him. Then not only does he overstay his welcome by sitting on him, like, in a demeaning way. Then he starts to face wash him and throw an elbow down on his face. Like, you talk about, like, that schoolyard crap. When you're a kid, you got a kid pinned down and you're, like, faking the haka loogie on his face. You know, Kimby. I did it to you the other day.
Haka loogie.
But I just felt like there needed to be a response to that. And Braden Schenn, to his credit, skated over, and I call buzzing the tower. He buzzed the tower on him a little bit and whatnot, but you don't want Braden Schenn mixing it up with Jamie Benn either. I mean, that's a big, strong guy who's had a couple of unbelievable tilts with David Backes even. So I guess my point is, I guess where I'm pissed is, I think there should have been a response, and it doesn't mean going after Jamie Benn, okay? I've said this before. Not always can you match up against the guy who does it. But holy crap, they got Tyler Seguin, they got Radulov, they've got Klingberg, they've got all these guys that are, in my opinion, they're just sitting there waiting to be intimidated. So why not send a guy out there, or why not just go ahead and send a guy? Nobody sends a guy anymore, but why not have somebody take the bull by the horns, go out and make life miserable for one of those guys and face wash him and let him know next time Jamie Benn goes near Petro, I'm going to do this again. In fact, next time, break your nose. You know, Kimby, like, come on. You had to be sitting there. Your tongue had to be bleeding.
But isn't it quite ironic how in the last week, Boston went into Pittsburgh and all over media, they just destroyed him physically. There was a guy there that was also here. That's now in Vegas. And the guy in Vegas who, Gallant, an old school guy who likes hard work and that enjoys this type of player, McPhee, the GM, who was that type of player, they feel a need for this guy. And I even put it on Twitter this morning. I said, you know, that we lost this at the start of the year. That's why I was pissed at the start of the year. And that's what the Blues make up, I believe. And I've always talked about this, Ribs, and we have always talked about this. It's not just the fighting. It's someone that runs around, creates excitement in the Scott trade. That's where's that guy? And now it's gone to, it's all that, it gets to an embarrassing point when they start doing that. And people, you know, they start, a guy for Chicago the other day, Taze gets in a fight and, you know, there's no reaction from their bench and everything. Like, what's going on anymore? Like, that used to fire people up and it would change momentum in hockey games. It would, you know, that's what that was for at one point in time. But it was sort of embarrassing what went on for the Blues. I thought it was embarrassing.
Yeah, and let me just expand on this a little bit more, because the Blues were down to 5D because Bo Meister had already been hurt in the game. So you don't want to lose your minute muncher, Petro, by taking a bad penalty or maybe a 2, a 5, and a 10. And he's gone for the rest of the period because he instigated the fight. Who knows what happens? Yeah. Or like, what if he gets knocked out? Now you've lost, you know, arguably your best defenseman, correct, one of the best in the league. So it's my opinion that you have players on your bench that need to identify these situations and realize that your captain, not that he just got bullied, but he kind of did. He just got the schoolyard face wash, and you're sitting there. The only thing you can do, there's two things you can do. One, go right after Jamie Benn, and he's probably going to give you the cold shoulder because odds are you're not a player of his caliber that he'd waste his 5 minutes on at that point.
Yeah.
Or option two is you go out there and you make life miserable for all his teammates. You have, in my opinion, there has to be a response.
Let's go back to like the guest that we're going to have here eventually. Who was the defenseman at that time? But Mr. Pronger was around.
McInnes and Pronger.
Pronger and Al are probably, if you played the game, you played against him, you knew you were in a battle because their sticks were swinging. But they had that guy there to make sure that, and you've alluded to it many times on the show, if you would go out and do stuff, Ribs, the big boy was coming down the road. So people wouldn't, you know, they let you get that extra thing. Petro don't even have it. Petro's out there fighting for himself right now. So you want him to be a dirty hockey player to Mr. Benn. That's the guy he wants to take off his game.
Yeah, no, he can play with some edge to him for sure. I guess what I'm saying is I don't want him to get hurt.
I want him to be like a Pronger. Those are hard to come by. There's not many of them in the business. I get all that.
But I get what you're saying. He could add that to his game. He could have a little. Like, it's not going to kill him to give somebody a whack.
Yeah, but who's going to? So when that went on yesterday, that's, you know, that don't go on if big guy sitting on the bench. That probably don't go on, you know.
It's just, it had me really pissed off because they're in a battle for that game. At the time, they had a one-goal lead.
Yeah.
And then things just started to turn. And whether or not it's that one incident, I don't know. However, it's the one that sticks out for me as the momentum changer for the Dallas Stars. It looked to me like their captain had said, hey, boys, I'm here. I'm going to give it to their captain. And now let's see what we can do.
I know you're trying to jump your car. But look what their captain does, too, also. So the captain goes and does that. The guy that scores the game winner, what does he do after? Like, he's got a cockiness to him. And I like it because he takes it. He scores the big goal, snaps his stick. There's a cockiness there to him. Fans love it. There's nothing wrong with that in the game. You know, people like that. Now, back if you're a young kid, you don't want your kid snapping that because mom and dad are going to get mad.
$300 later.
But
he can afford it.
I just like that, though. There's a cockiness there.
I know. That's swagger, right?
I like that.
No, I agree. I think that him scoring that goal after doing all this and then snapping the stick and kind of giving the look like, you know, here we are, boys. We did it.
Yeah.
No way this team is beating us. That kind of look. And I just feel really bad because the Blues played a really hard game. It took a lot of speed that they used. Schwartz, he scores a heck of a goal. You know, you just hope at that point that they'd had enough in the tank left to stop the bleeding at some point. But I guess, unfortunately, they just didn't have enough.
Yeah. Is it possible for a guy like Pietrangelo to add that to his game, though, at this juncture? I mean, being realistic.
He's not going
to
be able to add it, right? Like, you either have it or you don't. It's not like, let me correct myself. Sometimes you can add it when you're a 16, 17, 18-year-old kid or 19. And, Kimby, you can speak to this when I'm done here, because I'm sure you had to, at some point, make a decision in your life that you were going to start kicking some ass. And it's not necessarily in you from like birth, you know, but as you go along, as you see it, you know that it's required, but that's at a fairly young age. At this point where Petro's established and he's got so many years in the league, he's a captain. It's not now that he's going to start playing that way. It doesn't come naturally. So for me, it would put him out of his comfort zone. So Kimby, you probably speak more to this.
And let's get this. If you watch Petro play, there are times he gets a little nasty with it.
You're right. Actually, in Minnesota, he was one of the only guys running around at the end of that game, hacking and whacking and cross checking.
I think there's a spot where I've watched Petro over the last couple, 2-3 years. He gets pushed so far, and then it's there. Now, back when Pronger and them were there, they had it right from the get-go, and that's just the way Prongs played the game and Al played the game. But you had to play it that way back in the day, or you got ran over. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we're in a different time where you can't get away with us. Like Pronger, when he'd be sitting in the bench or in the penalty box all day long. Now the way he played it,
yeah.
But he's got it. It's just not to the degree that it would have helped them. Like it's a different game now. So we've always said that, but I think there's a side in him that gets pissed off enough that he wants to go say that's enough, you know, but so it's not on a consistent basis, I guess is where I'm trying to get.
No,
to.
You're right. You know what? Thinking about it, there's been times when he has done that stuff. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe he just didn't feel like it was the time. Certainly, like I said, 5D, maybe he was tired. Maybe he was trying to get through the game.
Next time that man's playing and you got a guy 200 and some pounds laying on top of you, you might not be able to do nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, then, you know what? Then the response should have came from elsewhere.
For sure.
At that point.
For sure.
I want to remind everybody, too, as we're on Facebook Live, we're starting to see some comments come in. Let them roll. If we see some stuff on here, maybe we'll bring it up on air, as long as we can keep it clean to some degree. But yeah.
Why point at me?
Seriously.
I think maybe. I'm used to Jamie being on my right.
Oh, okay, that's better.
That's typically what it is.
No, he's got it right.
We've got some injury news today.
Yeah.
To talk about. It looks like Jay Bouwmeester is done for the year. Is that correct?
Jay Bouwmeester is done for the year, and Scotty Upshaw is looking at about 6 weeks, probably. 4 to 6 weeks.
Do we know what's going on with those guys? Or?
Hip injury for Bouwmeester, re-aggravated, the same problem he's had going on, and MCL sprain for Scotty Upshaw. So there goes, I know people like to hate on Jay Bouwmeester, but there goes a good chunk of ice time that you're going to have to replace. And with Scotty Upshaw, there goes a big piece of that energy you talk about that, you know, he's been moving up and down all around the lineup. Now what do you do? Right, like, where do we go from here? There's talk of them bringing up Wade Megan to fill the void. I don't know why you do that. To me, it's an automatic at this point to bring up Costin. This is his time to get a shot, in my opinion. And on D, well, you're hoping Edmondson comes back sooner than later. We heard he was skating.
He's
today.
He's skating today. Is that even realistic?
Well, it's realistic. He's skating. It's his arm. You know, full gear is not a big deal.
Oh, okay.
You know, we'll see. I don't think he's realistic to come back in the next couple games or even for this road trip. So they'll have to go with Schmaltz and probably look to bring in somebody else as well. But tough times and no better time than right now to get these young guys in the lineup. I mean, shoot, you have all these other reasons before to where you're like, should we not? We still have guys, you know, the older guys. Now you're losing all your older guys. You're getting injured. So it's no excuses. Jam in the lineup and let's see what happens.
The one guy that I, whatever reason, there's something going on, but Costin's got to come.
I think he's got to come unless he's really shitting the bed down there. Unless his attitude's not good, and I'm not saying it is. I don't know.
Yeah, something's got to be, because you fought all, this is your number one pick. He's a first rounder.
Well, here's your return.
You know how the NHL works. Your first rounder don't sit very long, and they're going to get an opportunity before a third or a fourth, or you know how that goes. So why is he not? And so this is perfect opportune time. I know you're still you can use the reason that we're still in the playoff hunt. We want experience. You're on desperate measures right now because it's either now or never. And so why don't I get this young kid up here, see what he's got? This perfect time. Especially going, you're going to have to build this team again. You know, you're going to have to bring in a lot of young guys, and let's see what he's got. You know,
I couldn't agree more. I think the time is now for some young guy to come in, whether it's
some young guy.
He was over at the Olympics, but Costin to come in or another player like that.
It's got to have something to do with the. I mean, I had a conversation, I believe it was with Dennis last week, about the calling up the guys. I know he brought up the four rule. There's got to be, but when you read it, it's got something to do with their age and what contract they signed, all this kind of stuff. There's got to be a reason why they're not calling up these young guys. Something to do with.
Well, after the trade deadline, you can only have, I think, four call ups. And they're emergency basis only. Now, with these injuries, you're allowed to call these guys up without using up those, because these are injuries, legit injuries. It's not an emergency basis. These guys are going on the IR, so they don't count against your emergency recalls. So they can bring up two players as official call-ups. Now they can. Without the injuries, they couldn't.
But what does that do to the player's clock? I mean, we hear so much about...
Well, it doesn't do anything to the player's clock because these guys are already under contract. Yeah. The only time it would do anything to the player's clock would be if Kyrou and Thomas get eliminated in their OHL junior playoffs, then they sign them and bring them up. They'd have 8 games to watch them. If they play 9 games, it eats up a year of their contract. So only when you bring in a kid that's not in your or not under contract yet, you sign him and play him, now that eats away at a year of their contract. So the guys that they currently have in the minors, they're already under contract, which means they're already there's a year that's kicked into their contract already.
Oh, okay.
So you're sort of playing a fine line here right now, Chromzo. The Blues are fighting for the last playoff spot. The team in the minors, I think the one in San Antonio is fighting for a playoff spot.
They are.
They got the one in Chicago that's rolling, but you're damned if you do and damned if you don't at this point in time. Some, you know, because you don't want to screw that up down there. You want to help yourself out here. The big club should always be number one priority, I've always believed. But, you know, you're trying to run a fine line right here, I'm pretty sure. But I still got the Costin guy's got to come. He's got to come.
I think so. I mean, who knows?
What could be the only reason, unless there's something going on we're unaware of, to not bring him up? I mean, is it... Like, I know you guys talked a little bit about maybe the situation's not right currently. I mean, and I know that's speculation. Like, maybe things aren't great, so you don't want him in that environment. I mean, is that possible?
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. Even if we want to assume, once again, we're not in the locker room, so we don't know. And I can tell you that I've been in lots of locker rooms that have had some issues or some things where they don't see eye to eye. And it's not as people think it's like this imaginary wall that runs through the middle of the room and like there's team so-and-so and team so-and-so. It's not the way it works. So bringing in a young guy, unless your team is really, really miserable in there and you're falling everywhere as far as in the standings, you got to bring a guy in. I think sometimes bringing a young guy in changes some of the atmosphere. So I don't know why he hasn't been given his fair shot yet. Maybe he's just not playing hard. Maybe he's not practicing hard. Maybe he's not living his life the right way down there. And it's hard as a GM to sit there and reward a guy ahead of other guys who maybe are, you know, committed 100. And I'm not saying that's happening. I'm just giving you situations that maybe this is why. Because he should have gotten his chance by now.
But again, my only answer to that is Megan.
Well, Megan came up last year, though. Remember?
Yeah, but
and
I mean,
he made
come
the team
on.
This year to start the season.
I know, but come on, I don't know.
He's never been given a chance. But that I'll tell you.
You're still the Megan guy's got a connection with Berube at some point in time because they played in the Wolves. But he come up here. He didn't hurt himself when he played at the Blues, and it was a numbers game when it come down to it. And so he's not going to hurt you. You know, he can come up and fill that third or fourth wherever he's got to fall in right now. So. You know, it's not bad.
He was a veteran guy, and sometimes these guys, like Megan, can be plugged in the lineup at right wing, center, left wing. Yeah. if you scratch him for 10 games, he's not going to sit there and pout. So, you know, I guess you look at it like that. If you have to scratch a Costin or a Sammy Blais for an extended period of time, you worry about things like that. So it looks like, I think, Dennis, I think I hear some knuckles dragging.
Jiminy. The conversation's about to take an interesting turn here, is it not?
This is, our guest is finishing a call, Dennis. So, sorry.
Lord only knows.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, and it's the frustrated fan saying, now, if this is how it's going to go, and again, I guess I am giving up on the season, which is stupid, I guess, because they're, what do they point out?
2 points behind, 2 points out. I mean, anything's possible. This road trip, to me, is going to dictate.
Yeah, it is.
They got three games against three teams that are battling. Big time.
Looking for a spot.
Big, physical, fast teams. Yeah. We'll see. I think for sure that this is going to be the big tell.
I agree.
I'd just like to see some of the younger guys. I guess at this juncture, when you get frustrated and you just think, you know what?
The younger guys that you really want to see, Chromes, and let's be realistic here, the only guy you really know is Costin. So you're thinking of these guys in junior that you're not going to get a shot at right now.
Well, I'm more curious about Costin. I mean, I have to believe. I mean, don't we have to believe the guys that know what they're doing about, like, Thomas and Kyrou? I mean, we have to believe those guys, right? I mean, you just don't get to see them.
But Thomas and Kyrou, too, you have to remember that their agents may not think it's their best in their best interest to sign a contract and jump into possibly a team that is not doing well. It might not be, like, there's lots of things. I know it sounds
crazy.
Does
that really go on?
Well, of course it does. Because what if Kyrou, they go through their playoffs down there too. Thomas and Kyrou, they're going to play a ton. What if they're bumped and bruised and, you know, it's been a long season and they get called up to the NHL, and what happens if they're not good, or heaven forbid they get injured even worse?
I guess I never thought about that.
Right? So you have to, as the agent and the parents and everybody, their camp, as they call it now, they have to evaluate, is this the perfect situation, or is going home, getting better, training all summer, getting on the ice all summer with these guys, working out with the Blues strength and conditioning guy, and then coming out in training camp, is that the best option?
Yeah, I guess I just always assumed that if the St. Louis Blues called and said, we're ready to sign you to your entry-level contract, the guy would be like, where do I sign?
Well,
I guess,
for a guy like me and, you know, other guys like that, I would have jumped at the opportunity, and that actually almost did happen to me. However, these guys are, you know, top. They're blue chip prospects, top draft picks. So they're sitting there going, there's no need to rush things. If you look at the NHL, like, they got a lot of young guys, but they don't rush them in necessarily, those guys. You know, they take their time and make sure that they do it right.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, folks. Oh, boy. Hey, welcome in our man.
Good to see you.
Antonio. How are you, brother?
Good.
Thanks for joining us, man.
Well, folks, as you just noticed,
our guest, Red Bull and some Ziggle Wiggle.
Our guest, former Blue and fan favorite Tony Twist, welcome to the show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. It's pretty loud in here. Beer, please.
The purple edition.
Now,
this is the perfect.
Jack back, please. Yeah, it's perfect.
This is perfect ice surface for us right here, Twister.
Well, I mean, still we might run out of breath from one end to the other. Do you think we'd get a shift?
Good thing it has balls.
I know I wouldn't be getting a shift in the air. It'd be too small. You can't handle the puck. Oh, yeah. What is this? What do you got here? What do we have here? What is this?
This is the Whipple, Urban Chestnut. You're about to find out what it is.
Oh, the whole top came off. You broke it.
Oh, no.
They heard you're a big drinker.
Well, I'm a big something. Just ask my ex-wife.
Oh, boy.
Well, that's quite tasty, but not at 11 o'clock in the morning. Right. Actually, it's not bad.
It's 11:03. It's 11:03.
Okay, it tastes even better now. I didn't realize.
Yeah, but if we're in Ottawa.
Get your fingers
right
out of my beer.
If we're in
Ottawa, this isn't after hours. Get your fingers out of my beer. And that's not my beer.
Get them out of my barley.
Oh, boy.
So what are you guys talking about today? You talking about women?
Here's a good one. We're talking about. Well, Chromes is here. We're talking about.
I knew somebody smelled. I didn't know who it was.
We're talking about a situation that happened on Saturday. Now, I know I'm not going to.
A lot of situations happened on Saturday. Which one are we talking about?
With the Blues game.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And now I know I'm not going to. It's not a systems question.
I had a situation too, but it had nothing to do with the Blues.
It's Jamie Benn, captain for the Dallas Stars.
Is that last name Meover?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, kind of. Hang on. The story gets better. He ends up landing on Petro and sitting on him and then face washing him and digging his face into the ice, and nobody did anything about it. Now, how do you feel about that?
That's awesome.
For who?
For us.
Why?
Why not?
Well, because our captain's head just got buried into the ice.
That's what I'm saying. I'm being sarcastic. I mean, come on. Who are we kidding here? Gee whiz. Do you think I think that's awesome?
I'm just sitting here going, I just underhand pitched it to you, dumb bastard.
I saw the look like I'm an idiot. No, of course that looks ridiculous. You're talking to, like Kimmy knows as much as I know and as much as you know, but you're a pussy. you know, you take anybody, don't care about your captain, but your captain wears the C, the one that guides the team, and you're going to allow that. I don't care who's on the next shift. You don't have to fight the toughest guy. You don't. All right, you find their best player and you run them over. You run their goaltender over. And if you have to, you whack the linesman and tell them next time. I don't care what you do. You have to make a point, and it has to be done quickly. It doesn't have to be done stupidly. You don't have to take somebody's head off or pull up Marty McSorley on a brassiere. You don't want to do that. But you do want to make a point. And better yet, the point should be made, and you'd be skating by the bench, theirs, by the way, and say, you know, don't be tying your skates because next time that you guys are out, I'm coming after you too.
But you let me ask you this, Twister. You, I don't know how much you've watched of the Blues this year, but
none.
Yeah, so you'll still know. But who on the Blues team is going to skate by any bench right now? That's not going to happen.
I don't care though. I know the lineup, but yeah. I don't care who it is. It's just the Broad Street Bullies and all. They were tough as a team, but take them individually, they weren't I mean, Dave Schultz had a name, but he wasn't the toughest by far and away.
No, I know.
By far and away, they had a team that didn't give two rats things about nothing, but they did stick up for each other. They came in and intimidated everybody, because if you grabbed one, you grabbed them all. And that mentality needs to be, doesn't have to be about fighting. I mean, it does transcend into team play. Team play, man, I got your back. You know what that says? Yeah, we got your back in the shower. Yeah. I mean, come on.
That's where it's gone to now. The game's changed so much, it's not even... It's an individual
That's
sport
embarrassing. Yeah, that really is. Your captain? Yeah, I got your back in the shower. I mean, that's it. The Glenn Anderson rule has now been applied.
Oh,
And Glenn is not. He's not. The rumors are not true. But he did when we showered together. It was great because Andy,
Excellent,
Andy is awesome. He is. I mean, this guy's been around the league, seen four straight Stanley Cups with the Edmonton Oilers. And both of us are sitting out, and we've done the workout, and we're showering. You know, we're getting ready to go watch the game. And I looked at Andy and I go, hey, Andy, you know, there's a lot of rumors going around that, you know, you might swing from both sides. He goes, well, you know, we'll try anything once, but it's a dead drop face, you know. And so I script the soap on my hands. I said, oh, shit, can you grab that for me? And he goes to bend down again. And he goes, oh, you got me.
Oh, boy.
That's a true story.
That's a true story. And the rumors are not true, but it was always funny.
Rumors aren't true, but that story
That is true, but he'd play it up. He didn't care.
He didn't care.
A great dude.
He was great. The one road trip as a young guy, he shows up on the plane with red leather pants and a fur coat, like a full length.
Oh, hold on. That was Slapshot. He was Paul Newman. He was one step away from Paul Newman, except Paul Newman, actually, they weren't red. They were brown with his brown leather coat. My God. Right. Sexy looking mug. Yeah, not really. This is a podcast, correct?
It is, yeah.
Okay. Let her fly, kid.
Oh, yeah, I can't do that. It's against my religion.
Oh, which is
none.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So what else? What else are you guys talking about?
Well, it was brought to our listeners' attention, maybe. Or maybe it was before the show. Maybe we haven't brought it to the attention. You may have fought the gentleman to my right the most of anybody in the league.
There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, it started in junior. I don't know how many times we fought in junior. Are you kidding me? It was from pretty much every game. I don't know if we didn't. There was probably maybe one or two that we didn't fight, you know. And it quickly became the MO. So Prince Albert would be full every time we came into town, and vice versa with signs. And it was just going to happen at some point. And unfortunately for Kimby, he could play the game, and I couldn't. So he had to go out and play a regular shift. All I had to do was come out and fight him. Yeah, so
you played regular back then.
Well, not really. It was kind of off and on. But
you know what? We had good hockey clubs, though. We had like good hockey players on our team. It was a big rivalry.
It was good with both clubs.
Yeah.
Had some graduate. I mean, those last 2 years, did you play with Manson and Bomber?
No, I come right after him.
Right after that. So those 2 years, like the 2 years prior to both of us showing up, you know, we're talking the Koshers and the Clarks and Manson and Bomber, and I mean that little close knit, but we didn't lose anything in the toughest side on either side because those guys graduated and come us. It was fun. It was we did some battle.
But I had to fight him because some other guys would go try it out of stupidity because they wanted to fight the big guy, and it didn't work out very well.
Well, Roddy Dahlman, Roddy Dahlman, God bless his, you know, his heart. It wasn't the biggest guy on earth.
No.
I mean, good Lord. But they were good battles. It was back in junior when it was punching the head contest.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
But seriously, they were punching. I remember coming out of most of those fights, most of them meaning this, everyone with... Like, I mean, I was in a fight.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no if and even if it lasted 15 seconds, you knew you were in a fight because you had knuckle marks on your forehead. You had an eye. You had a nose. I don't care who you were. If you fought in the WHL at that time, nobody was really hanging on, if anybody. Of course, there's a lot of guys that fought not to lose. Neither of us did that. We fought to win. And it was a punch in the head contest.
Our first ever fight. So we get going. It's in Saskatoon. And... So we finally get together, and everyone, the whole rink just stops and watches what's going to go on here. And we're just going back and forth. And I start to get a little bit better, and he gets his head down a little bit, and I got these, all of a sudden, this big right come from out of nowhere. And the funny part, my dad was there. It was one of the first games he goes, and he never come after that. But I'm sitting on the, so I go into, it didn't knock me down, but I go to the locker room.
Never knocked you down. You're ahead of a block of concrete.
I come back, I sit on the bench, and Wade Butchus, who was one of my close friends I played with, I'm sitting on the bench, and we had the visor there, and he asked me a question. I look over, and he starts laughing. I go, what? He goes, well, your fucking nose is over this way. So away we go. So they get the thing stuck up there, and you straighten it out. And the funny thing is, the next game, Daniels is in Regina. I was that's back then though. I went to fight him, and you know, and I'm fighting him 2 weeks later again with a broken nose. I'm just going, wow,
good God!
But that was without a blink. That's the difference between what's going on in today's game and what was going on back then. The give a shit factor of whether or not you were hurt or not didn't come into play. There was always respect amongst us, you know. If your things weren't correct, your hand was screwed up, your nose wasn't in the right spot. You know, the guys wouldn't be a dick.
Yeah.
But in today's day and age, you can run over your captain, face wash him, and drop anchor, and then just skate away. Nobody does a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I wasn't fishing either when I dropped anchor.
No. I think I know what you meant by dropping anchor.
I got you. Just want to make you double check. It's been a while,
yes.
Twister, we've talked to Darren numerous times on the show about his... you know, his young career, and then as he evolved as a player, and then doing what he had to do to play in the league. For yourself, like, when did you realize this is my path to the NHL?
There was no other path. There was none. I didn't have another path. There was, you know, a lot of guys grew up with the anticipation, and they had, you know, they wanted to get drafted in the National Hockey League, and they had teams and guys that, you know, they admired and teams they'd like to be drafted to. When I was drafted, my dad came into the room and said, "Hey, son, you were drafted." I said, "Yeah, I'm tired. We were all drinking out the night before with all the, you know, all the players in Kamloops." And I said, "Yeah, whatever." I mean, I really was not a concern because I was going to go to I had three invitations to scholarships to play college. So I was like, well, whatever. And I was drafted. I had no clue, nor did I even think about it. Ninth round draft pick in 88.
The funny part about him, though, the junior stories go funny, but... Twist, so no one knew about Twister, and you know, the rumors start going back and forth because I'm going to end up having to fight the bugger, but so you try to find out stories about him, and then all of a sudden someone says, well, he was into boxing and kickboxing and shit like that, and I'm going, well, ain't this a son of a bitch? So, as you're skating for warm-up, and you look over, and he's got the old hockey, you know, short and all long shit going here, and he's doing the goddamn splits over there, and I'm going, what the fuck's going on here? I said, we got a guy over here doing the splits. I said, so the kickboxing's probably real. What else is going to come with us? So, but he played the part on the red line. I'm going, Jesus, what do I got to do here now?
That was the full-blown Camaro. I believe you had a Camaro. Oh, did you have a waterfall or Camaro? Which one?
I had the chaser dude going back. The old porcupine hair.
That was. I believe that's what they call the waterfall. Short on the top and the sides, just kind of flows out the back.
Yeah. No dirt, yep.
Doesn't tie into a knot, though, at the end. I never saw that.
You know what's funny, though, is you talk about that, and it's funny because Twister, I don't know if you still can. We're not going to challenge him, but up until whatever, you can still do the splits. And
all
that stuff is true. But the best part was, and I'll never forget it, and we won't go into the whole story because I think we've done it before on here, is our buddy Reed Lowe, the one year. And you want to talk about, you know, you talk about, what you talk about a guy and you're like,
And he played in
the rumor surrounding
the W too.
Right?
He's the tough guy, yeah. and
he's as big as a mountain.
Christmas. So he goes out in a training camp and does what he has to do. He jumps Chaser and kind of gives it to him in training camp.
Well, you don't have to jump him.
You know what he's coming from. He was at the end of the day, he had to find a way to get you to try and get your job. And so, long story short, he kind of gives it to Chaser. There's some anger about it. Twister's on my team in training camp, and he's literally like, you look at a bull, and when it's just snorting, he's sitting there fogging up the glass at the old Hardee's Iceplex.
Bobby Flager's coaching.
Yeah, and I knew, I'm like, okay, this is not going to be good for the young lad, who's big as a mountain, but it's still not going to be good. Well, fast forward the next morning, you talk about, you know, guys doing the split. You're like, holy fuck, you look over and this guy, hey, all this must be true, right? Twister's over there with a cutoff shirt and there was 225 pounds on the bench press. That was our test, you know, see how many times you could do it. Well, everybody stretched together up top at Hardee's and Twister's over there and Reed Lowe is stretching.
It's all about the mental fuck, you know that.
Oh, yeah, the mental fuck. And Reed Lowe is stretching and Twister walks over to the bench press bar, stands behind it, and he's eyeballing Lowe's, picks it up and curls it like 10 times. So imagine that. Some guys couldn't even bench press that thing like 3 or 4 times. Twister's curling it with the arms cut off his freaking t-shirt. At that point, you just saw the blood like leave Lozy's face. And I'm sitting there going, that poor son of a bitch. You know, it's coming.
And Lozy, he showed up and did his thing.
Well, he had to take his...
And
he's
I did.
Beating.
He took. You know what? Losey was. He knew it was coming. And I guess Bobby Plager didn't want me to go after him, so I waited till Losey hit the bench, and I just went. So we had 6 guys in the ice.
Wait. He didn't just go. He yanked the kid off the ice. He literally grabbed the jersey, pulled the kid off the ice, and went on the ice.
It wasn't as bad as when I did bring my stick and my gloves. I didn't do that in training camp my first year.
That's a good point. But anyways, it ended up being where it was a bit of a moment, like a father-son moment, I call it. And I'm not trying to...
I slapped him in the head. No, I slapped him. I bitch slapped
him in
the head.
I'm not
disrespecting Lowe's. I open-handed him.
Okay, I'm not disrespecting Lowe's.
I'm not at all.
What I'm saying is he ended up where he was on the ice and Twister was trying to pick him up off the ice and he was giving little slaps like, you're grounded. I'm taking away your phone. I'm taking away your PS4. All that.
Well, because I was told prior not to freaking kill him.
Yeah.
And so out of respect, now Losey's just out of junior. I mean, come on. That's a pretty big step to jumping out of junior, okay, into a guy who's been a seasoned pro, who's done it, and I'm not saying that junior's not tough because it is. But it's a completely different caliber of fighting.
It's a whole other level.
You know, Kimby and I were fortunate enough that, and when we grew up in that W, that era was still, the young guys coming out of the W at that time, there wasn't too big of a step to jump into the National Hockey League. It really wasn't.
Look at the guys.
Right.
Wendell Clark.
And they stepped right in and did it, right? And we were stepping in and doing it. But I think the game has changed now where... you don't even know if there's anybody who fights anymore. But if there was, it would be different because the education process is so much different. Because, growing up on the Iron Lung, traveling back and forth, there was so much different circumstances, and it produced tough hockey players.
Yeah.
Mentally, physically, your goal scorers, everybody have a different mentality. Yeah. Why?
When you're on the bus all freaking
hey,
nice.
Hey, it's amazing.
Look at the coaches you had, too, though, like Ernie Punch McLean, Patty Janelle. Guys,
Patty Janelle.
And these are the guys you're 16 years old getting introduced to the game of hockey.
Right.
And their game of hockey is a little different than the average bear going there. They're coming through with, you're going to win on intimidation is how we're going to win this hockey game. But you learned, though. You learned. And you learned to respect the game,
so
though,
here,
too.
I got a quick Twister story involving me. And it's not the one where
last night?
It's not the one I made you wear the blue dress, okay?
No, so, and it wasn't blue, by the way, and you said it was a mini, but it was after.
Well, it was normal dress. It was mini on you.
We were rooming. I put sparkles on it, though.
Willing participant, I'll say that.
Absolutely.
My first training camp for the Blues, Twister's back with the Blues at this point. And he comes in, and obviously he's got a pretty good reputation as a fighter. Well, we're playing against each other, and I'm a young kid. You know, I'm trying to just get on the
team. Who skates 9,000 miles an hour, and they can hit like a hammer.
And so Twister comes over halfway through the first game we're playing, and he hits me. And so, you know, I'm thinking to myself, who the fuck is this guy? What does he think he is hitting me? You know, because does he not know who I am type shit?
He's lucky to catch you.
And so I give him like a cross check as he skates away. And he kind of looks back at me, a little shit-ass grin on his face, and skates away and nothing happens. And I get back to the bench and I'm kind of revved up, you know. And Basil McRae is on my team at the time. And Basil skates down and points his fucking finger in my face like a father and says, don't you ever fucking do that again. And I looked at him. I'm like, what the hell just happened? He goes, because listen here, you asshole. It's going to be me that has to fight him. Don't you ever do that again. And then I looked around. I was like, what the fuck? And then somebody says, oh, that's Tony Twist. I go, oh, okay. At that point, I knew I got a free pass that day.
Oh, my Lord.
Poor Basil. He was angry.
Don't you guys feel that the game has graduated to a spot where you don't even watch it?
Yeah.
I'm there. All right. And I'll tell you, it's not because – I tell you, the game's great. I mean, it's fast. It is eons above when we played. It really is, you know, talent-wise. But the whole philosophy that the philosophy of the game, what I grew up on, you guys grew up on, has changed so dramatically that – I don't want to watch. I want to see men play the game, not kids that are playing for their nameplate rather than the number and the emblem in the front of their jersey. That has got me so freaking disheartened that I can't watch the game anymore. Because you can see that instance right there, I turned the TV off. Yeah. You just face washed our kid. Nobody did a thing. I mean, that's right. Turn off the TV. That's not what I grew up with. You can't be a man. Look at the money you're making. You guys should at least 20 guys in the dressing room that are dressed, two others that are sitting in the backfield, and that's all you've got for us?
How do you think it got here, though? Like, how do you think it happened? Do you think it's the rules? Do you think it's the amount of money
the players
make? No,
it has nothing to do with the rules. It has everything to do with the player. The rules.
But then what changed?
Every criminal gets around whatever rules that are out there. He finds a way to get it done. Some get caught, some still do it, all right?
Yep.
But I'm saying every criminal does. Same thing in the game. What they did is they conceded, and there's nobody passing the baton. The baton is the graduation of the game. I mean, the last of them, you know, for us, you know, for me and you too, Al McGinnis. There's Al McGinnis in the dressing room. They're passing the stories on the bus, and then the baton that, you know, we had some great guys. You know, when, you know, I'll tell you what Keenan brought was a bunch of guys from Edmonton that, holy shit, talk about learning about the game. The McTavishes of the world and Wayne Gretzky. And you learn and you listen to these stories of them winning Stanley Cups, you know, running in the bus and all the story. That's the baton.
Story time.
Yeah, but the baton is so key and important.
Yeah.
But you know what? The kids don't have any good stories. Why? Well, because they got nursed into the game.
Yeah.
You know, when we're playing in the minor leagues, running on the long, traveling to hell's half to 8 hours to get to one game and playing the same day, you know, and traveling out. Yeah. Those stories, they're no one so much different than Wayne Gretzky's and Al McGinnis.
Yeah.
They're really not. There was no more of those stories. $2 million signing bonus, you know, a $500,000 signing bonus, a skirt on their way to the minors, you know, just pampered, you know, not even carrying their own equipment anymore in the minors. What's that all about?
You're right.
I think they've dumbed down the game too, Twister. You know, you look at the playoffs come. You know how we used to go back to back, day off, back to back. That just kept the momentum going, and the stories. That's when you talk about stories.
Those are
you
amazing.
Know, listen to those stories when those guys went through to win, and like you know, the Anderson, the Stanley Cup stories you'd hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know that's how, it was so hard to win the goddamn thing. Now you get a day off here, you get a week long break here, you get you know there, it's a pampered down version of this game is going.
It really is, and some of it there's a necessity to some of it obviously because the game is accelerated. There's monies to be made, and I'm not discrediting the game itself. Who I am discrediting is the players that allowed this to happen, meaning that there's the laurels of come 1999, 2000, the year that I retired. was, you know, kind of the graduation where the game changed, where they were really clamping down on the guys that were doing the fighting.
Yeah.
And they really did.
But what those guys did
is they conceded to it. So instead of doing their job, they decided to go, well, we'll just fight each other then. Holy, are you kidding me, dum-dum? That's not the game. You're not. The game isn't a state. And that. And you know what they did is they conceded to the game. And what it became apparent, well, fight tough guy's going to fight tough guy. And there is a reason for it, but you're not attacking the
reason.
But
there was no anger anymore.
But yeah, right. And we're going to shake hands and pet babies. No, Kimmy and I, we fought. All right, we smiled at each other. But it didn't mean that we weren't doing it again. It was, you know, there was a mutual admiration for what we did. But I tell you what, there was no shortcuts the next time.
That's what I was...
None, zero. I mean, I want to kill you, even though we're friends. Well, I want to kill you. You know, that game's gone.
I was telling the story, Twister. You come into Boston, so we met over in Irish bar. We're sitting there, and we're playing cards the night before. And don't get me wrong. I had the respect for Twister because we played the game, but we never hung out really. There's one summer in Brainerd, we hung out a little bit, but I wasn't always around. So he knew these people from Jimmy Vesey was from this area. So anyway, Twister's over there and we're playing cards, and the guys were playing with us. It's a long story on that version too. But we're playing there, and I'm sitting there, and everything's going good. You know, we're playing cards, and one guy goes, well, when are you two going to fight tomorrow? And I almost want to kick the prick in the ball. Yeah. just let the guy go here. Let me get a good night's sleep.
Don't wake him up.
I said, I know the guy's here. Don't worry. But it was going to happen. And it was kind of funny because me and Twister sort of chuckled about it. He said, oh, it'll be all right. We'll get our one shift and it'll be over. But I was trying
I got my one shift. He got more than one. I got my shift.
Hear me out.
That was it.
Hey, hear me out on this for a second. I didn't occupy the role you guys played, so I have
no really?
No. I have.
Well, I thought you did.
Listen, asshole. I kept you busy, so shut up.
You sure did.
So, listen. What I saw the difference from growing up and when I first came in the league is when guys fought, like, you knew you were going, okay, this and that. Like, if the tough guys... But it was when the puck dropped, wham, you went at each other. Like, it wasn't the step back, take the helmet off, skate around for 10 minutes. It happened from time to time. But I think where it lost its part in the game is when the staged fights...
So it became routine.
Came routine. And then it just became, like, if Twister and I were fighting, and at the end we're like you said, the pat on the back, oh, hey, good job. No, if my hand was still free and he wasn't on the ice, I'm going to try and give him one more sock him, because if I had my ass handed to me, I wanted to hit him at least once. You don't see that.
There's no stage fighting than when we played.
When the thing was different, though, when me and Twister played junior, we went through an era that our ice time got, like, we weren't the John Wenzicks and them. They got to play all the time. We get to where we're at, and we're down to like one, two, three shifts a game. So you had to make your appearance on the ice. You knew what you were going to go do. That's the coaches wanted you to do that. That's what you were there for. So they dwindled your ice time. The fourth line was pretty well non-existent, except for one guy on there would be a penalty killer, and then you'd have your two tough guys, and they would go do their job. The role that we played in junior, we got to do it. Because I got to play, I would go run guys. I would cause shit.
We earned it.
Yeah.
No, but we earned the
Correct.
Fight. Yeah. We went out and earned it. It wasn't like the one shift, oh, I got to do this.
No, yeah.
We went out and fucking earned it.
You can go find yourself a fight.
Well, for sure. Try to. You go out and fucking earn it.
We did that, though. There was a, like I said, there was an intimidation factor that you were going to play, but you got to play it when they're only playing two periods or two shifts a game. The tough guys are going to fight, so you're not really scaring anything else because they know that these guys are good. But they still know you're there in case something does stupid happen. But, you know, there's always someone there to fight.
And there were the layers, too, right? Like, you had layers. You had guys like you. Then you had, like, your middleweights. Then you had guys like me and other guys like running around, like, just trying to...
Earning a job for you.
That's right. Running around, causing havoc, running and doing all this shit, and then making sure that, hey, we're finding...
But I blame the coaches.
But you don't... But you don't... What you're doing is you're helping the whole entire team. And you have to have a coach that knows how to use
Correct.
Your battler. Because here, you can't just stick me out for one shift against the other guy and expect me to be effective.
Yep.
And here's an example. We're playing Detroit. In Detroit, out comes the point. Runs Pronger. All right. I can't. Jeff Cortinel off the ice. And it's right beside our bench. And there's the point.
This,
the point's clubs
he ran me over that game too, that little bastard.
I can't stand him. So he's got... He's picking up his gloves, and guess who's standing there? It's me. Down my goal glove. He turtles. I get 2 minutes for delay a game. He skates by the penalty box. He's laughing at me. They score. I'm in there going, oh, Christ. Mike Keenan is going to go one side down the other. I get back on the bench. He goes, Twister, you're out there. Doesn't say nothing. Now, this is after a goal. They've got their best line. They got all the Ovs and Lindstrom on the back. They got all the Ovs and Lindstrom. And I'm looking there going, oh, I know what I'm doing. Scotty Bowman yanks off one of the Ovs and puts out Koch. Koch and I line up, and he goes, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to two-hand fucking Eisman this time. I'm not going to break his ankle this time, but you tell the point. He better lay off Pronger, or I'm going to break his ankle. You and I will fight. And he goes, I can't let you do that. I said, I know what you can't let me do, but that's what I'm going to do. Puck drops, I two-hand Eisman. Joey and I drop the gloves. And we don't end up fighting. The linesmen get in. The linesmen see it a mile away.
Well, they
you know,
do.
We have
Trust
huge sport like this. Our heads down, smiling and giggling because we know what's going to happen. Get into the penalty box. And Coach and I are in the penalty box, and he's got his head down because you know the cameras are on you. And Coach goes, was that necessary? And I said, 100%, you know. And he goes, I know. He goes, well, I'm getting too old. You're getting too big. And I said, well, I respect Joey. Joey was, he's a guy, the old-time doctor,
I
you know.
I love Joey.
Joey is, he's a, you know, a tough guy from one end to the other.
I said, well, do you tell
freaking LaPointe to lay down? Well, you could see after we got out of the penalty box, Coach goes to Eisman. This is where the game was lost on our part. It's not about intimidating the guy who did it. It's about intimidating the guy who's going to get it. Coach goes to Eisman. Eisman, you know, to Scotty. Scotty to LaPointe, who sits him for the rest of the game. Why? Because he can't trust him. Because he knows that if he does it again, I'm going to break Eisman. You can't afford to lose Eisman.
He's going
to
lose
I'll
one
take
of his
the 10
guys.
Games. Now, that is when I say the guys lost the concept and how to do the job and bought into the league's program. Well, we're going to fight each other. No, you need to lead from their bench, not your own.
Yeah.
I want the other bench to be held accountable, and their accountability is not coming from your bench, from their bench, because they're scared you're going to do something. So you have their tough guy. Don't do that shit like Basil, or it's going to be me doing
that's right.
it. That again, okay, that's eons more intelligent than going out and doing battle the other tough guy.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, that eons more. That intimidation, and that's what the Broad Street Bullies did. You touch one of us, you got us all.
Correct.
We'll go in the stands. We'll go on your bench.
Yeah.
And we'll go anywhere you want. And that's the game. And I'm not saying the game needs to be led with intimidation, but it's got to be led with men with dicks. Not. I mean, seriously, it really does. I mean, I say this with all sincerity. The reason I've lost my admiration for the game is because of that. I never saw the game. Face wash my captain, put him down, rub his face in it, and not one, zero. That to me, I don't care if you've got a team of ballerinas. I mean, evidently we may, but a team of ballerinas, I don't care. One of them, at least, one of those, at least, got to go over there and say, hey, I like you. Pretend date him, right? And then go tell everybody else he has a small dick. At least do that. Do something.
Oh, boy.
There's got to be some sort of recourse.
Oh, shit, Crumbs. On that note.
No.
On that note, where do we go?
Well, he did mention something when he was telling his story that I think our fans would be interested in knowing, because I think some of it is probably coach-player relationships. Some of it's legitimacy, like, you know, who you are, what you've earned. You mentioned that you tapped Courtnell off the ice, like you got him off. Did you have that kind of freedom, or do most guys have that kind
no,
of freedom?
There was no freedom. It's just, again, going back to Keenan's on the bench. I know he gets it. All right. I don't expect my coach ever to tap me on the shoulder. If he's tapping me on the shoulder, he's telling me I'm an idiot. I don't know how to do my shit. That's embarrassing. When we had Coach Q, we got rid of Q way too early. When we got rid of Q, he had no idea how to use me. Like, zero. I would be looking at Q going, but when the fans start chanting your name and they know before he does, he's not putting you out. You think for a second he's going to coach for the fans? Always embarrassing, because he wanted to. He then realized, oh, I can't put him out now. I'm not going to satisfy the chance.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, he was still learning. That was his first year coaching, you know, in the National Hockey League. Mm-hmm. We get rid of him. What does he do? He takes a Chicago team, makes men out of them. They win 2 Stanley Cups. You know, he learned.
3.
Right. 3 Stanley Cups. But he made men out of those kids. He really did. They played for each other. You could see in the playoffs, the second Stanley Cup, they're in the overtime on the bench. You're panning over the bench. Chicago, smiles, sweating. They're wore out, but they have smiles on their faces. They know what they're doing. The other side is like, oh, I hope this game ends soon. I mean, seriously, you could see the difference, and it wasn't the players. They had all the talent in the world on the other side. But they didn't have what Q installed in them, and that was, we play for each other. There's no way we're losing together. We will lose individually. And that in there has been lost, and I can't watch the game because of it, because that's not what we have no more.
You know, we were talking about an incident that Blues fans remember, and it was a big one for you. I was telling the guys, I was actually at a bachelor party watching this on TV, and I'm hoping you remember because it's driving me crazy. But the Lindros incident.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you get asked about it a lot. My favorite, it's funny, I've watched you fight 1,000 times and saw all this stuff. My favorite thing was you smacking him on the ass with his stick and him not reciprocating with you. But it's killing me, and I'm hoping you remember.
I remember well.
He ran somebody small that game, like completely cheap shot.
J.J. Dagnall.
Okay.
J.J. Dagnall. Here, I'm
the Great Gazoo.
The Great Gazoo. I was put out here. Lindros comes to town, first time in the town, and I was playing forward, left wing at the time. Opening of the game, I'm with J.J. Dagnall on the left side playing D. Lindros in the first line. Well, I know what I got to do. Well, that doesn't kind of happen. They score in the first shift. I mean, they score in the – whoops. But it's not my fault. But I'm on
this guy.
This time it's not my fault. But I'm thinking, oh, shh. Are you kidding me? My first shift. I know what I'm out there to do. Oh, that doesn't happen. I mean, they put it in the net 30 seconds into the first period. I'm going, oh, I'm going to sit for the rest of the game. But, you know, Keenan puts me back out there, and he runs Dagnall. I go after Lindros. And Lindros is not even giving me the time of day. So for the first period, I played regular. Second period, I didn't see the ice. Then the third period, I get back out there. I run Lindros, and Antoski's out there, Sean Antoski. We fight, and he's gone to the rest of the game. He has vertigo for 2 weeks. Like his stuff wasn't right. I mean, he was a checkbook. He didn't know where to go. So at the end of the game, Lindros is right beside our bench. Talk about disrespect. He's right in front of our bench, and Jeff Courtnell's on the ice. And he's taking the face off. We're talking right in front of our bench. He looks over the court and says, I'm going to fucking kill you. It's in front of our bench. Hold on. You're going to talk like that to one of my guys in front of my bench? Courts, as soon as the puck drops, get the puck off the ice.
Well, you can see it on the video.
Puck drops, courts off the ice, and I'm out there. Now, he won't even look around. The puck's on the other end. I'm whacking him in the ass. You know, we're two zones away, and he won't even look at me. So after the game, here's the killer. This is my mentality.
Oh,
all right, my mentality is not playing for tonight. We're playing for tomorrow, too. So go into the gym, get the little Mr. T workout, you know, get some squat, take off the shirt, do some, you know, get all jacked up. And the other team, you got to time yourself right because they got to hurry up, get on the bus and shower. So I hurry up, and I'm going to pretend to fix a stick. Shh. I might use one a year, okay? So I'm out there fixing a stick all jacked up with, you know, just shorts and, you know, looking as big as possible. And out comes Lindros, and I said, hey, my son would like a stick from you. All right?
All right?
Sir. Okay. I would love to. Sign something funny. He signs, to Christian, tell your old man to leave me alone, Eric Lindros. What that did was to reinstill in him for the next game. You know, as he gives me, I said, thanks, man. I said, you do that again. I'm not going to have the respect enough for you. All right. I'm just going to drop you because I know. That was it. But here, that goes back to knowing not just your job, but how to do it over the continuation of time. You know, Lindros, sign a stick to my son. Leave your, tell your old man to leave me alone. That was in the back of his head for the rest of the games we ever played together.
Yeah. Wow.
That there is the key to doing the job. And Kimby knows, you know, those little two tiny things that are not taught. You can't teach them. You got to know how to do it. You learn it through osmosis over the course of time. Unfortunately, the course of time has not been granted to the kids, from the goal scorer to the fighter on the way up, on how to be that person.
Did you have a guy that kind of you looked up to?
Everybody
or taught you?
Everybody I played with. In the junior, everybody I played with. The whole team was that way. And if you didn't know that, you would, when you go to Prince Albert, you would know that's the way you got to play because nobody played different. You would understand real quickly if you didn't. You learned not just from your own team, but from other clubs watching because it was, the game was different. We all took care of each other. We had one mutual goal.
Yep.
One mutual goal.
Same for you, huh?
Oh, yeah. Same thing.
It wasn't one guy in particular, just in general.
It was a mindset. Like, I had a brother who's 4 years older than me, right? So he had gone off to play junior and all this stuff. And so
he has dirty shorts, by the way.
He does. But, you know, that word passes down back to you, and it's like, hey, you know, when you get here, you better not do this. You better do this. You better make sure you stand up for your team, this and that. So same thing applies to not just for brothers, but, like, guys who were ahead of you, right? That message gets sent down, and the people you play with know. And it's just like this unwritten rules, we'll call them, of how the game's supposed to be. And that's how you learned it.
But you know what? And it's kind of funny. It's still around in the old guys. Like, you watch Hitchcock and Rick Wilson, who was my junior coach. So they're on the Dallas bench. And Dallas gets the last roster change. So they knew who was on the ice. Thorberg, they know he's on there. So who do they put out there? It's in their mind to play the game already, you know. So there was the answer. But that's old school. That's old school. You know what I mean?
Well, it worked.
It's still there. Yeah. I can write it work. Because he didn't even have – Thorberg's there. He doesn't even have to win the fight. He just has to show up, and then the Dallas team was all jacked up. You know, they're standing up, and so the game was already won by them. You know what I mean?
I do. I agree. And that right there is, well, think about this. When Guy Carbonneau came to the St. Louis dressing room, I mean, Carbo was an amazing freaking captain for the Montreal Canadiens with Stanley Cups under his wing. Mm-hmm. Played against him when he was in Montreal. I was in Quebec. I played 44 games and I think 37 in the 2 years I was there or the 3 years that I was there. I played half a season each time. And it wasn't because I wasn't unhealthy. It was because, you know, Pierre Piaget would only put me in for whatever, those games. And Montreal was one of the big rivalries. Well, every time I played against Montreal, there's Guy telling me when he got here, he goes, I used to tell the team, don't fuck around tonight. All right, because we don't want that big monkey chasing after us. No, seriously. Now, that's the captain of a Stanley Cup team. I have
that
no...
That guy with his knuckles dragging on the ice.
But understand this. That was a captain of a National Hockey League team with Stanley Cups under going to the team. The team taking a different approach to the entire game. My impact was not just was before the game started. Okay, then I knew I was effective. Then I knew the job that I was doing and how I was doing it was effective. That's not happening anymore. No.
You're right. Let them sleep.
But that's not happening anymore because you have it established.
That's right.
When you went out and did it, though, Twister, and we did the job, you did the job because, for starters, it starts with yourself.
Like
you like doing it, but it was for yourself. But you also like to get patted on the back by your teammates. You liked when Brett Hall would tap you on the, you like when those guys would do that, because then you felt like you were part of the hockey club. And I'll tell you what, if I was playing in this days, Nashville's probably got it, but these other teams, Vegas has it. If you would go out and do it, I don't know if the damn guys would even, they don't even want to get excited about it
anymore.
That's
a shame,
You know?
Yeah, the guys probably wouldn't look at you sideways.
No.
They wouldn't probably say thank you.
And you know what, Brett
Which
Hall,
is a
when
shame,
you talk about that,
because
Chaser will tell you, Chaser, and you know the story. When Brett Hall, when we went to the bars after, he want you there. You know, and it wasn't just because, but he liked me. He included you in the team where now.
Because feel ostracized.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. 100% you feel ostracized. You're sitting at the end of the bench, you're a grocery stick.
Chris Chelios, Jeremy Roenick, they did the same thing. They played the game, but they would always include you to the process. I would hang out with JR all the time on the road. And Chelios was there.
Not because of any other reason that he enjoyed you.
Yeah.
Because the mentality that you carry and what I carry and what most of us carry was different than some of the other guys he may have played with. JR probably had wingers and centermen that didn't give a shit about anything but themselves.
Yep.
But with the realization that you're hanging with a guy that, hey, I'll sell my soul for you as long as you treat me right.
Yep.
What else do you want? I mean, the team starts right there. I want you to sell your fucking soul for me.
Yep.
You have to. All right, I don't care. Nobody else. Your family doesn't care when there's. I don't care about your family. Nothing. When there's 20 guys in the ice and the game starts, nobody else matters in the world except for those 20 guys. That concept is freaking gone.
Okay, I agree.
That is gone. When I played, it didn't matter. I couldn't care less if you could have been my brother. You could have been my mother wearing that. And I mean this with all sincerity. You screw up, I'm coming after you.
Yep.
Why? Because after the game, we're still friends and whatever. But during the game, my brothers are right there on the ice. That's it. That's over.
Yep.
No ifs, ands, or buts.
That's true.
You know what? That mentality goes over, and I'll tell you, Twister, you know, Reed Simpson, I played with him. Me and Reed are roommates.
Reeder.
We're roommates in Prince Albert, and nothing's going on in camp, so I skated over to him in camp. It was just our second year. I said, we better do something here. And so when we fought. And another story I'll tell you. And Greg Smith, who was our good friend.
Smitty.
So Bird Dog's in Quebec, and he's got – Bird Dog's got no respect for the French. And he just calls them all these names and everything. Well, he goes out and goes after one of these French guys. And I'm Bird Dog's good – we're good friends. We hang out. We live together. I got to skate over to him now after he does that. Yeah. I said, Bird Dog, you can't do that shit. So now we got to go. And but we're still friends, you know. But there was, but we knew our job. The job was there, and people respected you for knowing your job.
I mean, you fought Reed, and it was happy. Clarky and I were roommates in junior. Gary Clark, roommates with a smile. We dropped and then, with a smile. We fought three times.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's the best man at my first wedding. I had two. My first wedding. Yeah. So we dropped gloves, and as we're squaring out, he goes, "Loser buys pizza or loser buys beer."
Loser buys beer.
Winner buys. Okay, winner buys pizza. Loser buys beer. You know, my eyes shut, all right? So was his, but I'm on top of him because I clubbed him and with a smile. Clarky didn't even lose. He's a big smile. He's laughing. He goes, I guess I'm buying beer. We go back to our billet's house. My billets were watching it. They go, and I'm now Wayne Von Hagen, who was our billet, he's fully expecting a brawl when we get home.
That's going to carry over.
We get home. I got beer. He's got pizza. We're already talking about the fight, and Wayne's going, what's going on here?
What's wrong with
these two? It's just the game.
Yeah.
And then we go to, and then Clarky, he was playing in Salt Lake City when I was in the minor leagues, and he jumps me and he gives it to me. Like when I say gives it in the beginning, he gets a hold of me, and you know, I recover, but not well enough. I mean, he was on top. He goes off the ice, hands in the air. All right, doing this thing. All right. He goes to his dressing room. I go to mine. I am livid because he freaking jumped. I said, my boy, the guy livid, fucking jumps me. Now, our rooms are connected, right? The two dressing rooms by a door. I sprint off the ice because I know that door's open. I am running through the – Clarky shuts the door because I'm going through the door. He shuts the door, locks it, and I fucking run that door. And I'm trying to beat it down. And Clarky's laughing. You can't get me. You can't. I'm out of my mind. I'm going to go around. Now the police can show up because the trainer from Phoenix, right?
Oh,
it wasn't Salt Lake. It was Phoenix. Had asked the security to come down. So security has me handcuffed in my dressing room, all right? And you can hear Clarky laughing. And I said, I'm going to kill you. I'm getting handcuffed. He opens up the door and a big smile on his face. He goes, we'll go drink beer after the game. Locks the door. After the game, I mean, we shower up. After the game, I go, you motherfucker. So we come out, we get drunk. I mean, it's like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. The two of us are out drinking. And practice for us was early. We hadn't had breakfast, and both of us were not good. So he takes me to the rink. He goes to his dressing room. I go to mine. And, you know, we wake up to the guys coming in. Coach looks at me, goes, out with Clarky last night? I go, yeah. But here, the fact is that everybody knew that everything was good. I mean, I wanted to kill him. You know, if I would have gotten the dressing room, I can promise you there would have been, I would have ripped his arm off. But when the game's over, we went out, we drank, we hung out. Next time we played against us, it was in Peoria. I mean, the puck had dropped. He hits the ice. He came off the bench with no stick and helmet because he knew we were going. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. But that is the joy that we got out of that, even though, I mean, I know it's sick in some way, but he loved as much as I did. And he really did. It was a beautiful thing. Laughing at me as I get handcuffed. My buddy, the guy I fucking lived with.
You know, I got to ask you guys, I'm going to ask all you guys this question because fans are going to want to know this, because we hear about the brotherhood and you fight these guys and after the game you go drink beer. Kimmy, you've told these stories, you know, it's a respect, but we're not stupid. You guys, without question, have got, well,
I don't know. Kimmy's Jamie. Been telling me some stories about you, but I don't know. Okay.
So there's got to be a guy, at least one, that I don't know. You don't like him.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, no way.
Yeah. But everyone that we said we don't like, we have on our team. I can guarantee I did not like LaPointe, didn't like Maltby, didn't like Draper. Those three, because I played against them on a sometimes basis. They were the fourth line, grinders for Detroit. Way more talent. That's why I only got a shift or two. I'd have any one of those three on my team. Did I hate them? With a passion. With a pack. Did not enjoy some of the things and the antics that they carried on, but I could see the key and integral part that they played for Detroit when they did that. I'd have any one of those three guys playing for me. Did I hate them? Oh, boy.
Is that number one, like, on your list?
For me,
is there
number one, those three guys.
No, those three.
Well, that was interesting because I had to go into that locker room
years later and play for that team.
Right.
And it was a little bit uneasy, like, for the first scrimmage.
I can see why.
And then, you know, once you go have lunch and whatnot and all that, then you realize these guys are great guys. And like you said,
they
were some of the best teammates I ever had. Now, you know, obviously I didn't like playing against them, but that's their job. You know, they're not supposed to make me feel warm and fuzzy out there.
Todd, right. Ewan, same thing. Todd and I have a history. When Todd and I, my first training camp, you know, he was the incumbent, and, you know, I'm the guy coming in.
I remember this.
So the first training, it's
it was at Brentwood.
Yeah, and it's Sutter, who's coach, his first year coach. Now, you know, everybody knows who Brian Sutter is, you know, tough as nails, and, you know, lad, and he was, you know, he was strictly all about the game and the biz and the boys. All right, so he's doing his thing at the hotel prior to training camp starting. We're all there in the auditorium at the Holiday Inn in Clayton.
The Holiday Inn, yeah.
Yeah, which is now some other whatever. And he goes, all right, and here's the speech. This is how tight it is. This is how long it is. We're all like, oh, yeah, listen to this coaches or whatever. And Brian comes in and goes, if you're a goal scorer, score goals. If you're a goaltender, stop the puck. If you're a defenseman, be a defenseman. If you're a fighter, I want to see what you got. That was it. That was the end of it. We all got in the auditorium to hear that. So me and Chase are looking at each other going, oh, my, Merry Christmas, right? So we're getting into the elevator. There's Sergio Momesso, Todd, Ewan, myself, Herb Raglan, and Chaser. I mean, you couldn't think of a motley crew to be up there. I looked over at Ewan and I go, I guess you and I are going tomorrow. Oh, and yeah. Ewan looks at me and he goes, what? I said, oh, yeah, I'm coming after you. And Chase is like,
Jesus, what is he doing?
What are you doing? He goes, I don't have to fight you. And I said, no, I know you don't have to, but you're going to. So the first shift we go on each other, he won't drop his gloves. All right, I want to make my mark. Listen, I'm the only guy with steel blades still on my feet. All right, everybody else got plastic ones. I got steel ones. Right? You know what I'm talking about? And that's not a lie either. So first shift we go on each other. He don't want to fight. I said, well, I'll fix this. You know, and you can hear, and Sutter's the coach for our team, right? Yeah, relax, laddie. It'll come, laddie. I said, oh, I know. So the next shift, he goes out there. I leave my stick, my gloves, and my helmet. And I go to center ice. And the team, and right, I'm the fifth guy. I'm not even in play. I'm at center ice. And I'm yelling at Todd. He won't even address me. So in the, I'm doing a circle around center ice, doing the chicken. I forced the, I'm serious, this is a training camp, doing the chicken, I'm doing this. He has to fight me. We fight, and he splits me over top of the head right here. I can get stitches. We go to the training room, and it was a good fight. And I looked at, we go to the training room, he's on one side of the one table, I'm on the other. And the trainer goes, you got to get stitches. I said, well, after the game, I'll get stitches. He goes, well, you need to get them now. And I said, no, we're going back out.
We're going again.
And Todd looks at me and goes, my hand hurts. And I said, well, my head hurts, but it don't matter. He goes, well, I'm not going back in. I said, the trainer looks at me and goes, I said, butterfly this thing so I can get back out there. He wasn't going to butterfly me. He said, okay, fine. So I put my helmet back on and went out. All right, I finished, and Todd never came back out. Okay, that was a precedent-setting thing, you know, because the gas was good. I probably need the stitches right away, but I would not.
Yes, it's good.
I mean, I'm not, for the life of me, am I going to allow that to happen in training camp? Right in thereafter, after that game, you know, I played the rest of the game, and Brian came up to me, and he, you know, and Brian started happy. I mean, he doesn't care. He really does. I mean, he's happier than anybody. And, you know, good game, lad. You know, maybe tomorrow we can see you play. And I go, well, maybe. But I'm going after him again.
I thought that's what I just did.
Right. I mean, I got no skill. They changed the training camp because of that. So Todd and I never hit the ice together again. Seriously, we were supposed to be scheduled to be on the ice because, you know, you had different teams.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't ever get scheduled together again. Next training camp that we have in?
Same team.
Well, no. No, Chase and I are on one team, and he's on the other.
Oh, God.
I am going after Todd again. I hadn't seen the National Hockey League, and Todd was suspended for the first 10 games because, again, going back to guys taking care of themselves, he had a bonus. One more game. That was back when you had to touch the ice for a game.
Yep.
So at the end of the game, somebody came off the ice. I'm not going to mention who was. Came off the ice and said, hurry up, get your game. Because he hadn't touched the ice. They didn't want to give him his bonus because it was the last game of the year.
Yeah, I remember those. Games right. Played bonus, yeah.
He got out there, ended up in a fight, and got a 10-game suspension. So I knew that they were missing a tough guy for the opening of the season. So we're lined up against each other. Chase is on my team. I look at him. You know what? We're going. He goes, I'm not fighting you. I said, oh, yeah, you are. And I two-hand him. from the like across the shins. He takes tomahawks me, goes across like this. He's gonna take my head off. He swings. I duck. Chaser comes to the other side, cuffs him. All right, so we gotta. I'm serious. So the two of us are after him. Everybody drops their gloves. We don't end up fighting. Me and Todd don't end up fighting. They called the game. We never saw the ice again.
Ronnie now, Caron going was back pissed, to the, though, wasn't he, about that?
Oh, yeah.
The prof was
heated. Oh, the prof was out of his mind because it was, again, it was like a goon show. But long story short, Todd and I did not get along. He goes to San Jose. I was at first game that I when I got traded to Montreal. It's you and is playing for Montreal. Merry Christmas. Who comes up to me? Marcel Abou comes up to me, and he goes, I hate Shane Corson. I mean, I've never met Marcel Abou. It's my second day there. Hate Shane Corson. I'm going, Marcel Abou, owner of the... Oh, I mean, I'm going to kill him.
I get it.
That's the motor. He doesn't even know me. First shift, I go after Corson. I'm up and down him. I mean, it's embarrassing. Montreal's in Quebec. He won't even address me. Corson looks at me and goes... Get away from me, you big goon. I'm not coming near you. You know, Corse, the way he speaks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my Lord. So next shift, out comes Ewan. Well, I'll beeline to him. I'm playing defense. I'm at center ice. The puck's in our end. Ewan won't. He's not going to drop his gloves. I'm skating out of the other end. You can watch the video. He comes from behind, drops his glove, and suckers me. Thank God he didn't hit me anywhere here. He hit me in the helmet right here. And you can see me go backwards, and then I give it to him. I mean, it's embarrassing. It really is. I mean, I laid my pipe to him because he suckered me.
Well, hey.
So after the game, we don't speak nothing. I haven't, you know, next, we don't really speak at all during this, during when we're playing. We go to San Jose, first shift out. He's in San Jose, and Todd's a big guy.
Yep. He's a
big dude. Big man. We're lined up against each other, and it's his first shift, I think it was the opening of the game or second shift of the game. We're at center ice. They just scored. So it must have been like the second shift. When I say the opening, it wasn't the first 5 minutes. We end up fighting, and he hits me. I go backwards. It was a good, freaking good punch. Goes back, but I'm still doing this on the way down. You know, still.
Oh, yeah, I remember
all right,
that.
And he's swinging from up there. I drill him about 5 or 6 times from the bottom of the ice and split him wide open. And we're going off the ice, and I'm looking at you. Can watch the video, too. That's a good one. I'm laughing. I'm smiling, sticking my tongue out at him because go get stitched up. I have an admiration for him because he's, you know, Todd was a good, tough guy, but he was afraid to do the job. He didn't like the job. And I understand he did not like it, but he was good at it. But we coached together, our kids. We never talked about hockey. No. We never talked about our fights. We never talked about any of it. He was a great guy. Never once did I approach that with a bad attitude because I knew he did his job. I didn't mind. What an awesome dude, man. I tell you what, great guy.
Todd was a guy, though, because he could... He's light like Reeves because he could skate in that twister and he could do
that. Ever.
His brother was the tougher. His brother knew his role. Dino knew the role, and he was a tough little bugger in the minors. He was one of the tougher guys.
Yeah, he was. Dino was tougher than Todd was, but he didn't have the skill.
No.
Well, I'll tell you what, Tony. This has been one of my favorite episodes for sure.
Good. Wait till we go to the restroom together.
Remember that backwashing?
Holy smokes.
We're going to wrap it up. You know what I mean?
I know our
I'm
fans.
I'm not a dirty man.
Our fans are having a great time with this. I sure hope we can get you back.
Sure.
Honestly. I mean,
absolutely.
So much more to ask.
Can we get
so
a shift next time? Because we're in a rink right now, and I've been sitting on the bench the whole damn time. I mean, I want to get a shift. Who's coaching? Can I get out?
Andrew's coaching. Right okay, he'll send you out.
Andrew, what do I need to do to you to get a shift?
Hang on. We'll take care of that.
Have you ever seen one of these?
We'll see. Off the air, we'll take care of that one.
But, you know, I just want to thank you for coming on. I know the fans have been, you know, you're our most requested guest. And people are like, hey, are you going to have Tony on? Are you going to have Tony? I don't know either. I mean, except for Jamie tells everybody what a great guest you are. So,
no, I don't.
And again, I know we've been looking forward to you coming on, and I hope, you know, we can get you back.
Sure. I didn't mean to monopolize the conversation.
No, my goodness gracious.
I just thought I'd do my best.
That's what we needed. Otherwise, Cromer talks more.
No, I'm used to sitting next to Jamie, so I know all about monopolized conversations.
Yeah, but I didn't put my hand on your lap like he does.
But no, seriously, would love to have you back anytime, really, that you want to join us. There's going to be – typically what will happen is we'll get all kinds of questions rolling later on.
Why are you watching porn?
Well, it's not porn.
That's really uncomfortable. You know, at least could you watch like normal stuff instead of this like male-on-male stuff?
Yeah.
It's uncomfortable, dude. I'm going to tell you now, if we're doing the radio show next time, I can't sit beside you if you don't watch this.
I hear you.
Man on man stuff.
Yeah, that's four men.
Male animal on male animal.
No, I didn't see that one. I'm like, holy cow, that guy's hung like a horse.
Well, good stuff, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks.
Hey, for all of our listeners out there, I hope you enjoyed our special edition today with the man himself, Tony Twist. Thank you so much for coming on. Of course, you heard from Jamie and from Darren. Just good stuff. We enjoy doing this sort of stuff. Unfortunately, not a lot of great things to talk about with our current team. So let's get some past guys on here. And again, I know he's a fan favorite. Special thanks goes out to Lion's Choice. We're getting ready to eat here.
The two that I ate, I didn't really say how good they are because Lion's Choice is one of my favorites.
Well, you're getting ready to have all you can handle.
Well, no, the two I had already were really delicious. Well, but I don't know why did they give you the. You don't even have to buy the soup. When you go in there after and they have that big canister of soup, why the bowl so small? Well, like, they're little tiny bowls. And that's not enough soup.
You better wrap it quick, Cromer.
Merry Christmas.
Wrap it up.
All right, getting ready to start lunch. Don't forget to check us out, Blues NHL Podcast. BluesNHLPodcast.com. Multiple things you can do there. Subscribe to the show. Absolutely free. Do your shopping at Amazon. Again, special thanks to all of our social media partners for everything they do for us. We want you to follow us on our social media sites at NHL Show, at STL Blues Podcast. Find us on Facebook. Some of you have been watching us on Facebook Live. Again, it was great having the guest on doing that. Again, follow us at Blues NHL Podcast. Invite your friends to do so as well. Special thanks to lineupmedia.fm. We appreciate everything they do for us. All of our affiliates out there, Mick Light with Art City Sports, thanks so much. St. Louis Blues Hockey Memes, St. Louis Blues Fans Unite, everything STL Sports. Our sponsors couldn't do it without them. InnovatedCompanies.com. All three arms underneath that umbrella there. We got heating and cooling, construction, and, of course, the electric company there. Our friends and yours, Randy and Stephanie Green, thanks so much. Make sure you check them out. Tommy Brown, Tax Resolution Specialist. Synergy Hockey Skills.
Woo! Does this look like one of yours?
Synergy Hockey Skills.com.
And of course, the Nelson family, NelsonLandServices.com. And of our gracious host, Dennis Minner, live from Minner Arena. We love the fan cave here. Thank you so much. Our producer, Andrew Allen.
What does Dennis stand for?
Guys, we're out of here. See you next week. Blues NHL Podcast. Let's go, Blues.
This podcast was a presentation of lightupmedia.fm.